We made this.
How did you get out there?
Fire escape.
It's 20 stories.
The doorman's intimidating.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker.
Not much to tell, really.
Peter lives with his aunt and uncle.
Did you catch that spider guy yet?
No, but we will. This guy wears a mask like an outlaw.
I think he's trying to do something maybe the police can't.
Can't?
You know, if you're gonna steal cars, don't dress like a car thief.
You a cop?
You seriously think I'm a cop? In a skin tie, red and blue suit.
Who are you? I know it's been rough for you, Peter.
I forgot all about that thing. It was your dad's.
Your father was a very secretive man, Peter.
Dr. Connors, I'm Richard Parker's son.
Your father and I were going to change the lives of millions, including mine. Extraordinary. How did you come up with this?
There's a rumor of a new species in New York. It can be aggressive if threatened.
I gotta stop him, because I created him.
That's not your job.
Maybe it is.
Eight of New York's finest versus one guy in a unitard.
If you want the truth, Peter, come and get it.
I am issuing an arrest warrant for the masked vigilante known as Spider-Man.
I'm in trouble.
Welcome to Podcast 616, a podcast all about the Marvel Universe for the We Made This Podcast Network. I'm your host, Carpenter Lockwood, and in this episode we're going to be discussing Amazing Spider-Man from 2012. In this movie, it's a pretty typical Spider-Man origin story. He gets his powers, he loses Uncle Ben, he ends up going out with Gwen Stacy. And he faces off against Oscorp's Dr. Connors and his failed experiments to use cross-genetics to regrow his arm and improve humanity in general. Joining me to discuss the episode is my guest, Craig McKenzie. Hi, Craig.
Hello. You can't see me, but I am hanging upside down.
That's very impressive.
That blood rush to my head, that's what it's all about.
It's quite the rush. Yeah. What do you remember about the film? Like, how do you remember what you felt about it first time around? Like, back in 2012?
When
the world
actually.
Was supposed to end?
Yeah. It didn't, unfortunately. It almost ended last year and didn't, but we're still here. Yeah, I do remember how I felt about it. I remember in the run-up to it, I was thinking, God, I do not want to see a reboot of Spider-Man, for God's sake. We just had this. It'd only been a few years since Spider-Man 3, and it'd been less than 10 since the... Or exactly 10, kind of, since the Raimi origin story. So it's going to have to sit through this again. It's crazy. And I remember being indifferent to the casting, because I hadn't really seen anybody in anything other than Sally Field and so on, the, you know, the heavy hitters in the cast. But Andrew Garfield, I wasn't really aware of him. Then I saw The Social Network and I was like, oh, this guy's interesting. He seems like he'll be good. He sounds a bit like Hayden Christensen, which is a bit off-putting somehow, but he's like Hayden Christensen with talent somehow. So I was excited about his casting. And then I saw the film and I was like, you know what, there's something here. When it's not trying to retell the origin and do its own thing, it's very, very good. There's things it does really well and there's things that it does not as well. But yeah, I remember being pleasantly surprised at the time, even though it is a kind of paint-by-numbers in some cases. And there's a lot of studio meddling that makes it what it is. And well, we'll talk about the second one when we talk about that, but that's worse. But this one is quite low key, actually. It's a good film.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's standard Spider-Man, but it I think all of the Spider-Men so far have, you know, they all have their own merits to their movies.
No, you're only allowed to like one and you have to hate the others. That's the rule.
I'm polyamorous. You can't do that to me.
Well, that's the internet. It's all binaries. You can either love something or hate something, and you're only allowed
but
one Spider-Man.
But I'm gender fluid. You can't fit me in a box.
No, I like all Spider-Men as well, even though I'm not supposed to. I like them all.
Yeah, well, you know, they're all coming from like the same kind of thing, and if you like that thing, then you know. I didn't really know. The only thing I'd seen Garfield in before this was his Doctor Who episodes, the Daleks in Manhattan. So I'll try not to, like, you know, fawn over him too much, but he is just gorgeous.
He is a handsome man. He is definitely a handsome man. Makes him hard to accept as Peter Parker for some people. It's like, how can people hate this handsome, well-dressed, well-adjusted young man?
Like, I it was so funny because I was on TikTok and I remember they were talking about, like, the casting for Spider-Man and, like, moving on from relatively cookie-cutter Peter Parkers and stuff like that. Like, if we have Miles Morales and stuff like that in future and other heroes, and it'll be like, it'll be wild in like 50 or so years or whatever when people look back on previous Spider-Men and they hear that these three very similar looking white men with brown hair were all like controversial choices for Spider-Man, and the one that people thought was miscast was Andrew Garfield and for being too attractive. And it's like, I adore Spider-Man and the Spider-Man films, but as a young adult who was a teenager, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, I am kind of fed up of seeing adults pretending to be teenagers, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem I have with characters like Batman, Spider-Man, and Superman in cinema, is we never get to see them develop beyond a certain point. So we're always looping back to the beginning, and then we're going through all this early year stuff again. It's Peter Parker in high school. It's most of the comics I've read, he's not in high school for very long in the comics. So most of the publication time that Spider-Man has existed, he's been an adult, either in college or beyond. And I find that more interesting. I would actually be more interested in an adult Andrew Garfield version of Spider-Man in the MCU than it would have been with Tom Holland. And we almost got it. It seemed like there was going to be a point where MCU were going to inherit this version of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be in the Avengers, Oscorp Tower was going to be in the background, but they'd already done their digital New York and stuff like that. What happened was, or at least as I understand it, he spoke out against The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and about how he wasn't all that happy with it. So then Sony weren't all that happy with him. And there was some investor meeting or whatever that he failed to attend. And then after that, they just let him go. And it was around the time of the Sony email hack as well. So it was all going to pop for them. And then they did the whole, right, we're going to loan them a Marvel and see if they can fix this for us situation. And now we have what we have. Which, it's weird. And the thing is, Andrew Garfield is my favourite of the three live-action Spider-Men for a lot of reasons. And I think it's a shame that he was cast at the time he was. He was the right guy at the wrong time, I think.
I do love Tom Holland, and I do think that it's better to have someone at least closer to Peter Parker's age, you know, with when they released it in the MCU. Yeah. But it would have been just so amazing to see Garfield Spider-Man go far, you know. It's like when me and Robert were talking about Venom, like there's just so many potential like things you can dive into, so many potential threads, and I see that when I, you know, go back and watch these movies, there's so many things he could have done, you know. So many lovely storylines and sad storylines that they could do. And I, you know, when you watch, you know, rewatching Amazing Spider-Man tonight and thinking about later rewatching the second one for our next conversation, like, I know I don't really remember Amazing Spider-Man 2 that well, and so I know what I would have liked it to have been now, and I have vague memories of it definitely not being that, you know? Yeah. So
yeah, it's a mess, but we'll definitely get to it.
Yes. I think in, like, pretty much every Spider-Man film, and even in Venom, we get a moment where they're sat on somewhere they really shouldn't be sat, taking a phone call. I love that so much. Just perched on a fire escape, or dangling off a building in Eddie's case, you know? I think this one, he's just on some stupid tall building, calling Aunt May about the eggs that he keeps forgetting.
That he eventually remembers.
I've got to say, though, when it comes to the tech, it doesn't do the I know science so I can do every type of science thing.
Yeah.
Because he does specialize, and he does research. But I gotta say, Oscorp is pretty, like, iffy. Like, just in like, general sort of, like, lore or, like, consistency. Because they act like it's so high profile and high security. But she didn't even ask for his ID when he took his name badge for the internship. Yeah. And then as soon as this dude claimed that his badge wasn't there, they kicked him out, like, bodily threw him out within seconds. Yeah. And I'm like, why didn't you just calmly ask for his ID?
Yeah.
To verify, like, I was just, that kind of bothered me. I was like, this is meant to be so high security, but you didn't check Mr. blue eyes and brown hair that his ID was right, you know, like.
Yeah, if they'd made it
she
to
knows
Spider-Man.
He was bullshitting her as well. Yeah. You know, like, why?
She just hates her job, that's what it is. Or she's working her notice and she just, I don't care anymore, I'm leaving in 2 days.
She's like, fuck it, come in. And then this dude's like, wait, my name isn't here. And she's like, get out then, I don't care.
If they'd
that's
made
the
it
only
to,
explanation.
If they'd made it to Amazing Spider-Man 4 or 5, that kid would have came back as a villain. Like, you ruined my life, Peter Parker.
Yeah,
I had
a definitely.
Promising internship at Oscorp, and now I'm going to kill you.
He should have been the guy that got turned into Electro in the second one. He should have been, and he's like, I tried to get in, but all I got was the shitty janitor job, and then I fell into it, and now I'm Electro. That should have been his origin story.
Yeah.
Also, like, these new interns are a bit shit. Like, you know, like, they, like, it seems like Oscorp's whole thing, Dr. Connor's whole thing, for a while now, has been species cross genetics. They have that whole, like, welcome hologram presentation about cross genetics set up. So this is obviously, like, this isn't top secret.
No.
Like, the specifics are, but, like, Oscorp is doing cross genetics. That's not a secret. That's probably what Dr. Connor's, like, fucking thesis was on.
Yeah.
And none of these interns knew what they were on about except Peter, who has done, like, a week of hyper-focused research on it.
The thing of it is, you've got these interns who are there, and so what do you think we should do about curing Parkinson's or whatever it is? And one of them's like, stem cells? And it's like, yeah, well, that might work, but what I'm thinking of is a bit more radical. And then it's that thing they do in things where they want to have a science-based threat or a science-based plot, and they have this...
Yeah.
So what you have is a concept that's very easy to understand, such as, if we can give abilities that exist in the animal kingdom to humans, then we can cure any disease you can think of. It's not a complicated idea, at least as a high-level statement. It's pretty simple. And you have that thing where one person will report back on, here's what I think we should do, and it'll be read as, oh my God, you are a genius. You are so smart. Much smarter than anyone else here. But all Peter Parker is saying is, we could give the ability to heal brain cells that a zebrafish has to some woman with Parkinson's, and then she's healing herself, and it's, oh my god, I can't believe that you're so advanced and came
you're
up
so
with this.
You're so advanced. You read the welcome page on our fucking website. Oh, I just realized in his fucking the couple of Bing montages they have in this movie are hilarious to me.
Yeah.
That I think that's one of the main things that really dates this movie is the research montage and how terrible it is. But like Dr. Carter's and the Oscorp website is like the least high-tech looking website. That was another inconsistency I noticed, is that they made it look all futuristic in the office, but the website was just like so early 2000s, like really early 2000s. Like this is the ugliest website ever.
Yeah,
you couldn't have put some of that sci-fi into the website.
Yeah, all I know about Bing is my browser of choice is Firefox. Maybe maybe browser nerds will hate that. I don't know, but I like to use it. I just use it. But every time it runs an update, it will default the search function to Bing every single time. So I just type it in. I type in something to search, and it's done this Bing thing again. And the settings to change it to Google. Is Google okay? Is it still there? Sony Vaio, though, everywhere. Everybody uses a Sony product in this movie for everything. It's hilarious.
Oh, right, I didn't notice that.
It happens in all of Sony's movies, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I bet.
You'll see how obnoxious it is in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, because they stop trying to hide it. It's just everywhere.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Also, like, the, you know, I'm not really judging on, like, you know, scientific etiquette and, like, random science babble that they give, because it every film with science in it does that.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I think I'm just thinking about this more sort of like being older now and also having the pandemic. But like when the scientists came out of the sealed spider room, they had all of their PPE still on when they left the room, and I'm like, surely they're putting that on to protect themselves and anything else from cross contamination. So surely they should be taking at least the gloves off when they leave the room.
And that thing that has that keypad that nobody would remember how to use.
Yeah.
If that existed, there'd be a post-it hung up next to it that showed you how to do it.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, Oscorp security is super shit anyway, so that would be really funny if they did, because that would be more in character than Peter managing to figure it out. But like,
well, he
Peter
just watches,
Parker,
doesn't he? He just sees...
Yeah.
What's his name? I can't remember the character's name, but...
It's, like, Dr. Rava or something like that?
The guy from Life of Pi, which is hilarious because he was he hung around with a Richard Parker in Life of Pi as well, kind of.
I mean, Peter dealt with being rained on spiders way better than I would have. You know when he goes into that cool spider room and then he like flicks one of the webs and it like starts winding them up?
Yeah, obviously they answer this in the second film, but in this film they don't give you all the information you need, so... Nothing happens to that spider to bite him to give him powers, right? So if you just got a room full of spiders that could give anybody powers, judging by this film, in the second film they explain that it can only be him, which sucks because that undermines the whole point of the character, really. The idea, he's just a normal kid and it could happen to anyone, but it happened to him. Whereas in this, at least it's, I mean, could someone have a hole in their PPE and accidentally get bitten, suddenly they've got spider powers? Are Oscorp aware that they have a room full of power-giving spiders, potentially?
Also, like, I remember, you know, they've got, like, the little capsules with the webs in it, which is obviously setting up how Peter creates his web shooters in this movie.
Yeah.
But, like, that's not how you store spider silk?
Like, no, I suppose not.
What? Yeah. I don't understand how... It's silk, it's threads. You can see it as threads. I don't understand what they're actually meant to be doing with it. That they would store it in these tiny capsules instead of on spools. I don't know what they're actually getting at there.
And certainly in the comics, it's a fluid and then it hardens when it makes contact with air.
Yeah,
and then, so I don't know what they're doing with that. But also, if you want to find out who Spider-Man is, see who's putting in a lot of orders for this webbing.
How did he get in that time? Did he use his... I'm assuming he used his powers a bit more, maybe climbed in through a window this time instead of risking security at the front door?
Well, no, he just buys it because you see
Does
the
he just
box.
Buy it?
Yeah, you see the box arrive and it has the the pellets in there. And then he's playing with his web shooter in the next scene.
Oh my god, that must have been so expensive. Oh my god, how? Yeah.
He's supposed to be poor as well. Which you don't get that impression in this film. He's just buying stuff
all
the time.
No, you do not get the... He looks more middle class, but he's definitely still a working class hero in this in this movie, you know? But yeah, he definitely looks a bit better off than Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Well, Tom Holland has an army of drones and access to infinite
resources.
Yeah, well,
no, I'm talking about, like, at the beginning, at home, Tom Holland. They actually do make him look quite poor in that tiny flat, getting tech out of the dumpster and stuff.
Yeah. Or Tobey Maguire, where he's constantly not knowing where his next meal's coming from.
Yeah, this Spider-Man is a bit more financially stable, which is why it would have been so interesting to have them explore that and like him going out into the world and getting his job at the Bugle and stuff. Because like after Ben died, it would have been more financially difficult, you know. I feel like after Ben died, they, you know, maybe they would have had to like sell the house and move into an apartment or something. You know, I don't know, they, you know, something like that. Maybe the bills would have been too much for Aunt May in that house after a while. That would have been interesting. That would have been very Spider-Man.
Although I suppose it's only a few weeks that the film
in the second one.
They do mention financial difficulties in the second one, because he is selling photos to the Bugle in the second one. It's just Jameson isn't in
it. So it's like the start of that, I guess they could have gone more into it later had they not let him go.
I don't think there was any interest in that. And again, it's one of those, well, they did this last time, so we're not going to do that.
Yeah, that's fair. I love the watching him get his powers in this movie. It's really nice. It's really nice because there, you know, it's a fairly standard origin story movie, and there are certain things about standard origin movies that are very enjoyable. And I find the figuring out how to use your powers, the initial transformation, it's always my favorite bit of an origin movie. And I love the way this film does it. You know, he's all like feverish on the train. He accidentally beats up all those guys. I noticed this time around, you know, he accidentally rips that girl's shirt off because he's got his hand stuck to it. He gives her his jacket. He has his jacket on the train and then doesn't when he get home. And I was, you know, I was like in my head as he was running down the street away from the train stop, I was like, you better have given that girl your jacket, you know. And then he did, and I was like, yay, that's my boy.
There's a weird trend at the time in superhero stuff where emerging powers mean that you destroy a bathroom.
It
happened a lot at that time.
It happens in Wolverine.
That's one of them.
I mean, it makes sense. It is the first thing you do in the morning, most likely.
But does Aunt May not say anything? It's like, Peter, what the hell? What happened in here?
What the fuck did you do to the sink?
You've ripped the sink off. The doorknobs are all... What have you done? How did this happen?
How did this happen?
Your uncle's about to die. We can't afford this.
One thing I feel about with most Spider-Men is that most of them are neurodivergent, or at least I believe they are, and obviously they have this Spidey sense, but once they have that initial like power gain, they never seem to get overwhelmed by it. They don't get sensory overload, which does happen to... I think it happens in a couple of cartoons, maybe, and stuff, and it should happen. Like, Tom Holland says, where in Civil War, like, ever since the bite, it's like my senses are dialed to 11. It's like, surely that should be super overwhelming. Like, if you can't fight without goggles helping you focus, how are you supposed to put up with a high school? Like, that sounds like a sensory nightmare. And it's like, I'm just like a normal, person with ADHD, and I get sensory overload. Surely someone with super senses and ADHD should get super sensory overload from like a school, you know? Like, that's my only gripe with a lot of kind of like superheroes and particularly Spider-Man, is that I would just like to see him get like sensory overload sometime, because I think that works.
They
it fits.
Haven't really covered the spider sense extensively in any of them. They shoehorn it into Far From Home, as in he defeats Mysterio by shutting his eyes and sensing where to go, which is fine, but it's it's a bit of an afterthought because it can disappears from the film for most of it. And in this, yeah, you get that. It's a little sound that plays whenever a spider sense is triggered. And in the comics, it varies in terms of how it's covered. Sometimes it's just an incidental thing that shows up just before he'll get hit so that he knows how he knows to dodge.
I do like how smoothly they do his little like reflexes in this movie.
Yeah.
You know how he just suddenly grabs something? Yeah. It's so slick. I really like it. But yeah, they don't really go into it very much.
There's the hint of it overwhelming him twice. When he's on the train, he hears the water droplet come down the bottle.
Yeah, yeah. And then the spider in his bedroom. But again, that's like the initial transformation. It doesn't happen like later on. And that's what I really want, is that he's still constantly struggling with these senses, because that's just what his life is now. You know, like what we found was missing from the Venom movie is that literally no one is motivated to do anything for any reason.
They just do things. And,
and everyone has a good motivation here. You know, you really know what everyone's feeling. You know, you get Gwen's like worry about her dad being a cop and Peter also throwing himself into danger. And when she obviously just thought she was going to be going out with the weird kid at school. And then, you know, you get all this stuff with his parents and Uncle Ben, and you get how Aunt May's feeling, and she just wants him safe, and Dr. Connors and, you know, his arm. Although I do have issue with Dr. Connors, and that issue is, can we please, please start hiring amputees to play amputees? Please! Literally all you have to do... Like, I don't understand, because it's more work, surely, to edit out an arm than just to not shoot the arm when he's supposed to have it. Yeah. Like, you know, it's so frustrating, you know? It's really annoying.
And can we hire actual mutant lizards, please? That would be great. They need work too. This is the one chance a mutant lizard got to appear in a film and they didn't get to.
But like, the thing is, you know, the only time we see him with an arm is when it looks weird and needs to have special effects on it anyway. Yeah, so, why not hire an amputee?
It's
so weird. It's really, crusty with all the, you know, the shedding skin. And then it's, this weird, thick, baby, slimy glove hand, which is, fascinating but super gross.
Yeah.
I was watching that one. And obviously, there's going to be, a point here where it turns from arm to lizard. And in a practical effect sense, when it goes from icky glove to real human arm. And so to avoid, showing that, they, you know, most of his, elbow is out of shot.
Yeah.
When he's, looking at this new hand. So why the fuck couldn't you have just hired an amputee actor and have someone else stick their hand in? You know, it really pisses me off watching it. I was like, you could have made this movie accessible for a disabled actor and you chose not to, and I hate Hollywood.
Although Rhys Ifans is pretty good, although I have issues with Connors as a villain because he starts off well and then he just becomes mental. It's what happens a lot to villains in these things. They go from, okay, I'm a normal guy with a relatable motivation, and now I'm trying to turn the city into giant lizards. That's what I'm doing now for some reason.
It doesn't actually, his leap to, you know, turning the whole city doesn't actually work in this movie, because you get the sense he wants to help everyone, and that is attached a little bit to him that is sort of attached to him wishing he still had his arm. And I don't know how an amputee actually feels about that as a character motivation.
Because it depends on the amputee, doesn't it? Some people are okay with it, some people aren't.
But obviously that is his motivation, but you do get the impression he wants to help more than just himself. He's not selfish. He's doing things for the greater good. It goes from him, you know, doing things to help more people, you know, oh, we can't start human trials, it's not safe. And obviously him realizing that the thing isn't working because it's affecting him negatively and going to stop him on the bridge, you know. But then he decides, oh, this is really fucking me up, but I'm gonna turn this unstable formula on everyone?
Yeah.
That leap doesn't make any sense, because he's like, when he was saying all his stuff in his research in the sewers, he was like, you know, he was saying it's not about curing things anymore, it's about evolving, it's everything like that, but the formula isn't stable, and he is very much aware of that. That's his whole issue.
Yeah.
So, like, why would he already start to turn everyone? Like, you know, it kind of feels like, because in the Ultimate Spider-Man, there's a lot with Dr. Connors, so I feel like I understand this movie better having watched how Dr. Connors goes and comes back, and how Peter wants to help him, and how sometimes he is just a mindless reptile that gets used by other villains, and how sometimes he's struggling and he's trying to be good, but he's still, you know, him and stuff like that. And, you know, I feel like what should have happened is he should have kind of gone underground for like ages and then resurfaced with some sort of formula that would have worked. To a degree, it wouldn't have just turned him into a killer lizard.
Yeah,
you know, there's just such a leap that doesn't work.
Yeah, Spectacular Spider-Man does a great version of the lizard as well. So when you watch that, you'll see a really good adaptation of that too. Yeah, so a few things to take away from the whole villain setup, which is a bit ridiculous. One of them is going back to our earlier point about how stupid Oscorp is as an organization. So you've got the bit where Dr. Life of Pi Guy says, we're going to test this at the Veterans Hospital. It's like, well, the formula's not ready. It's unstable. It's probably going to kill people if we're lucky. Mm. If we're unlucky, well, you know what happens. But he's like, nah, we're doing it anyway. And by the way, you're fired. So what happens is they go to the Veterans Hospital, right? This formula can be traced back to Oscorp because they're supplying it and it does damage to these veterans. They're ruined. Their reputation is ruined after that. So, well done. Yeah. You've bankrupted Oscorp because you conducted illegal experiments on veterans with on an untested formula. So, great stuff.
Yeah. Like, even if, like, you know, that particular formula is classified to the level that only Dr. Connors can get to it, that kind of thing, and that he can erase the evidence and everything, it's pretty fucking obvious.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously Dr. Connors was the first one to go, and the fact that the man himself has disappeared is very obvious. It's essentially a paper trail. It's like the negative space paper trail, you know, when you try and cover things up and you can see the pattern of covering up.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how you spin it, like, Dr. Rather has just ruined Oscorp for his boss.
Well done, dude. Yeah, great stuff. Multi-billion-dollar organization just tanked overnight. Well done. Just because you couldn't wait for a formula to be tested a little longer. Just because, whatever. But the other thing about Connors and his plan to turn the entire city into mutant lizards, so as you say, the formula is not ready. It's not permanent. He keeps having to shoot up to turn himself into a lizard, and it doesn't last very long. So,
and it's going to be even more diluted over this, like, cloud.
Yeah.
These, like, smoke bombs. So, like, what is he trying to do? Yeah. Temporarily turn a bunch of people into lizards so they don't hate him anymore? Like, what's the vibe? It doesn't make sense.
So all Peter has to do, he already finds a sewer lab, trash it, and then wait.
Yeah.
All right, you have a night of mutant lizards running around causing trouble, but after that, problem solved. There's nothing else to threaten anybody. I mean,
if you think about it, I mean, they could have, like, you know, they, like, really, they could have just waited until after Dr. Connors had set off the thing, and then just set it off again with the antidote, you know? Like, that would have been funny if they were like, right, he's going to use that machine to set that cloud off and all that, and then what we got to do is we got to sneak in, make the antidote, and just send that out. And she'll be like, yep, works for me.
Or also, Gwen, while you're in Oscorp making this antidote that I've asked you to make, trash that device, break it, throw it out the window.
Yeah.
I don't know, just whatever, do whatever you need to do to break it so that it's non-functional. But
Peter, yeah, why didn't
crash
she...
his lab, wait till it wears off, beat him up, job done.
So she grabbed the machine, right, that device that he wanted, and pulled it into the cupboard with her. I don't really remember. I think spacing out. So why didn't she try to break it?
I don't know, because otherwise, like, you wouldn't have a finale of the film, I suppose.
Yeah, like, that's like a serious bit of, like, scientific kit, but it's, you know, it's not been used, and I'm pretty sure, you know, with something that I don't know, I'm pretty sure you could put some dents in it with a fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
You know, like, just smash it up a little bit. You know, if you just, literally if she just took something hard and metal to the bit where the like antidote or the poison is supposed to plug in,
yeah,
and just ruined
it, yeah,
the adapters,
yeah,
then like how far is that gonna, you know, how far is that gonna spread? You're gonna maybe like inside, yeah, the little capsule or something, like it's, yeah, not gonna go very far.
No,
it's not gonna get through to the cloud sprinklers, is it?
Yeah. Well, she figured out that he was after it as well,
yeah,
so she thought, I'll hide it, but didn't hide it very well.
That's the annoying thing about making teen geniuses,
yeah,
is that you make, they always write them like too powerful. They write them too smart to make mistakes, but then they make mistakes that they wouldn't make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everyone like, you know, makes mistakes no matter how smart you are. But the thing is when they make smart teenagers, is they always make the teens make the wrong mistake.
Yeah.
And so her mistake is not, you know, her mistake should have been that she didn't realize he was going to this device. That should have been the mistake. Her mistake was not trying to immediately destroy it, which,
yeah,
is stupid. Like, she would have been like, he needs this, I gotta get rid of that. Not, I've gotta drag this into a cupboard and hide.
Yeah.
You know? You can't make them smart and then make them do the one thing they wouldn't do, just so that they're not infallible.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big, like, it's a big pet peeve for me. If you make intelligent teenagers, they have to make actual dumb mistakes, not, like, life-threatening oopsies. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
At least she doesn't get kidnapped, though. That's something.
Yeah. What's interesting is that because of her dad having this job, is she's not the one giving Peter the "this is your responsibility" speech. Which is interesting, because, you know, she is not the most morally upright in this movie. You know, she wants Flash to stop bullying the kid, but she doesn't step in any quicker.
No.
You know, Peter was further away. If she wanted to immediately stop that, she could have run over and stopped it, but she doesn't. She just wants to get Flash to be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that she can kind of embarrass him a little bit and just be like, oh, hey, don't be a dick. Come to your tutoring session, you know? But she could have stopped him sooner. She is not the most, like, you know, she didn't want to get involved, you know, like Peter in the beginning. So she's not the most morally upright.
No.
Which is what these girlfriends can be sometimes. They're either super selfish and don't want them to be Spider-Man because you die and I'd be alone, you know?
Yeah.
Or they're like, no, you have to do the right thing. You have to help people. Whereas she's kind of like, I know you have to, and I'm used to my dad having to go out and help people, but, you know, it's,
yeah,
not your job, you know, like, you know, you're not, you know, and it's nice, you know, that's a little bit more dimension for,
yeah,
her, you know.
She says to him, why does it have to be you? And he says, well,
yeah,
I created him, I have to fix this. So he,
yeah,
feels that responsibility for it, but she's like, let someone else do it. Look at,
yeah,
look at you, you've been scratched, you smell like crap because you've just swam around in the sewer and then come to my house, which,
yeah,
yeah, it's just, yeah, throughout that whole scene I'm just thinking, my god, he must stink.
Yeah, do you think she managed to like sneak him in the shower, or do you think she just like grabbed a bunch of baby wipes and like
god knows,
deodorant?
Yeah. It's, you know, when her dad comes and is like, hot chocolate, he's surprised he's not saying, what the hell is that smell? What are you doing?
Yeah,
in there?
Yeah, that would have been funny.
Yeah,
he would have been. She would have just been like, neighbors smoking weed,
yeah,
on the porch.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but yeah,
that would have been funny. He doesn't really realize that this is totally a vendetta.
Yeah,
like he's trying to tell himself he's doing a good thing because they're all criminals, but he's definitely just hunting that guy that killed,
yeah,
Ben. He doesn't really realize it until he talks to Captain Stacy.
Yeah.
And so when he's being kind of mean, it's nice that we get to see the quips, but it's like he is being mean with it,
yeah,
because at that point he is being mean, and I kind of like it. Like, it's kind of jarring to watch because he's like, ah, typical Spider-Man, oh, that was a bit rude,
yeah,
you know. But like, I think if we'd have a few more quips later on, it would have felt like a bit more of an arc. But I know he does a bit more of that in the second one, doesn't he?
Yeah. It's the head tilt as well,
creepy,
when when the criminal's there, yes. And he does the head tilt, and it's very sinister. And then when he checks for the tattoo, and he's like, "This could have went a whole lot worse for you. It's like, you're out for blood. That's
so un-Spider-Man." And then he realizes, "Ah, shit." Yeah. It comes after the bridge
where he realizes that he can be a force for good. Yes. And I love the bridge sequence, even though he saves one kid and then leaves all the cars dangling, possibly with people in them. Well, we know that Doctor, whatever his name's in one of them, and they just leave him and he never appears again in the film. He hits his head and then that's him, he's gone. But the whole point is...
That would have been funny if... Well, I mean, does he survive? Is he in the second one?
No, he never appears again. After that moment, he doesn't exist, which is hilarious. And again, it's a consequence of we cut so much out because the studio told us to, but it's just a very weird thing.
At least this film is coherent, whereas the Fantastic Four remake got cut so much that it stopped making any sense whatsoever.
Yeah,
and was perfectly cast but turned out really shit.
Yeah.
This one didn't suffer quite that badly, but there was just a lot of loose ends.
Yeah, well, the bridge sequence, it's probably my favourite sequence in the film in a lot of ways, because of the bit where, well, you've got the kid in the car and the kid is terrified because, you know, there's some weirdo in a skin tight costume hanging around, and he takes his mask off and he's like, "Hey, calm down, I'm just a normal guy," and that's he takes the time to calm the kid down.
He doesn't even like hesitate really before taking his mask off. He can see the kid's gotta take it off, that's, you know, and it's that moment you see him turning away from the stop bad guy to help people.
He has a choice. It's a lovely chase the bad guy or help someone, and he chooses to help someone, and that's it's growth for him. And the time he takes to help the kid, it's properly heroic, and it's something that you certainly at the time in some superhero stuff you weren't seeing a lot of actual heroism going on. They were going in and fighting people or whatever, but there wasn't any like personality to it, but that gave him a lot of personality. And then obviously it pays off later in a similar way to the Raimi film, where it's all of New York comes together to help Spider-Man. We're going to tilt our cranes so that he can swing across the city.
It's so nice.
And it's also such a cheesy moment, but I think it is quite uplifting. It's very well done.
Literally uplifting.
Yeah.
Very sort of working class hero moment with the cranes. It's nice.
Yeah,
you wouldn't get the CEOs like moving someone to help someone like that.
No, it's that. Look, they're evacuating the city. There's a one lizard somewhere, and they're evacuating this. It's like, no, get the cranes. I'll pay you overtime, and then they tilt them, and then it gives you that long swinging sequence, which is cool.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, throwing a bit of first person into the swinging, which they didn't do enough of. Which I'm glad of, because
I'm not a big fan of it, but then again, that's because I get vertigo, so
I'm afraid of heights, so it would have bothered me. And seeing it, I saw it in IMAX back in the day when it first came out, and in 3D, which I don't remember being jarring at the time, but there's only a couple of moments where they show the first person perspective. So
I've really seen Spider-Man using a web, really, except for maybe like you've seen him catch villains in a web, but like using a web as like a sensory aid isn't really a thing in any other representation of Spider-Man. I think it was so cool
with his labeled
very
camera.
Cool. Yeah, with his label, it was the label maker that done him in.
It's just when the lizard also picks up, it's property of Peter Parker, like, you idiot.
It's like, you fool. It's so funny because that's like such an see, that's the thing, he's a smart teenager that makes an easy mistake. It's a thing he looks at every day, so he's not gonna be thinking about it. I shouldn't leave my name on it, instead of just I know he wants this, I'm not gonna destroy it, you know, like that's a legit mistake.
I like that web scene. It's that problem solving, isn't it? It's the figuring out, how do I find the lizard? This is a way I can do it.
Also the parallels in that scene while he's setting up the web, the parallels between him and Dr. Connors are set up brilliantly. I mean, you know, it's a bit spoon-fed because it's a Hollywood movie, and Hollywood makes sure you know everything, you know. They're just like, we're gonna tell you the name. He's called Peter Parker. Did you know that his name's Peter Parker? Like, literally, they say it like three times in the first 10 minutes, just so you get it.
Yeah.
He's Peter Parker. But, like, yeah, they, when Connors is reading out about, like, you know, enhanced abilities and all that, and it's, you know, you everything he's saying, you've seen Peter do or experience earlier on, and it's while he's setting up this magnificent web, and Dr. Connors is hiding away in the sewers like a lizard, and Peter's setting up a web like a spider. It's so cool. It's just really nice, that bit.
I love that scene where he goes to Captain Stacy and tries to say, look, Doc Connors is a mutant lizard. You should probably look into this. And it's just after he's off the phone with the mayor, and the mayor has been talking about a mutant lizard, and it's like, all right, we'll look into it. And then he's just, it's like, Dr. Connors, the Dr. Connors that wrote my daughter a recommendation letter for college. So what difference does that make? Why would that affect his mutation into a lizard? And it's, well, this when you find out the truth, this college recommendation letter, well, that's going to take on a new life, isn't it? She's going to be, she'll be the girl at college who got the recommendation letter.
Who got recommended by the giant lizard.
By the lizard.
And, like, because that, the thing is about that is, what annoys me is that they're trying, in this movie, because he dies, they're trying to paint Captain Stacy as a morally good cop.
Yeah.
You know, like, completely morally good, because he's following the law, he's about justice, and he just wants to make sure that, like, you know, things are getting done the best way, you know, taking out the bigger criminals, as opposed to immediately taking out the, you know, the car thieves and shit.
Mm.
And so, you know, they're trying to paint him as a good guy, as a good cop, a totally good cop, not morally grey, but that bit is just so, like, office politics. That is where the sort of the corruption of these systems come from.
Yeah.
And it's like just casually throwing that in there, but then still trying to have him be this good guy. It's like you were ignoring him, you know? And it's like, I know it's like he turns away and is like, give us everything we got on Dr. Connors, but it's like, what's the fucking point, you know? Like, that's just really annoying of you.
We also have nothing on him. He's a scientist that works at Oscorp. He's never done anything wrong in his life, probably, up until this point. So
give me everything you've got on Dr. Connors. Just Google him, sir. Like, what do you want from me?
Use Bing, you'll find him.
He's on Bing.
He wrote a book. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend reading it. It's all about lizards and stuff. Wait a minute.
He was friends with a guy who died in a plane crash. What do you want, sir? Yeah. I don't...
I don't know what information you
He
you
once got detention at school for playing a prank. I don't...
Yeah.
Are you good, sir?
We'll bring him in for questioning. The scales on his neck could be a bit of a giveaway.
Yeah, it's just, it's a bit of a non-statement, that, but that's just another, like, police jargon thing, the same way that films do, like, science babble, you know, techno-babble.
We'll go to Oscorp and we'll see that mouse that's eating the other mouse.
Yeah, convenient he gave the managed to give the entire office the day off, and no one actually came in.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's always someone
that's real. If I turned up to work and a manager came up and said, you can all go home, there'd be no hesitation. Everybody would just leave immediately.
Oh, yeah, but, like, you know, I bet, like, I don't know, this is probably just me having ADHD and forgetting about it, but if I thought I was going to be in the next day, I would have left half my shit there by accident. and then I come in and get eaten by the fucking lizard because I forgot my, because I got my phone charger at work because I thought I'd be in the next day.
Also, Connors doesn't work there anymore. He was fired earlier.
Yeah, like, oh dear.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in this film that just don't add up, where...
Yeah. Also, this building is meant to be super secure, but now the entire thing is empty. Like, he can't. He may be the lead scientist, but he can't tell security not for the work for the day. But they don't seem to be there anymore.
Yeah, but I suppose you only see the lab, though. You don't see outside.
Oh, is it meant? Oh, yeah. I think it's meant to be the lab is the only one that's empty. But because then Gwen evacuates the building with a fire alarm or something?
She sets off the fire alarm and evacuates later on, so there's loads of people there at that point and they all run out.
But also the lab is quite nebulous as well, because, like, don't you see, like, you know, Connors and various important shit happening in that sort of that first lab, and that's where the fancy machine is. And that's, like, a pretty main part of the building, but now they're saying it's, like, an exclusive part of the building, and it's kind of confusing.
Yeah. It's just best not to think about it too much.
Oz, just don't think about Oscorp and it's fine.
The villain factory, that's all it is.
Yeah, it's where the villain did a thing and now he's bad.
And there's some stuff in the basement that'll come useful in future films. But you don't see it in this one.
Oh, you know what? At the end of the movie, at first I was like really disappointed that Peter didn't go to the funeral. Because like I know he's meant to be staying away from her, but I still feel like he should have gone and stuff like that.
Well, he does, but he skulks in the distance like a creep.
Yeah. Like he should have actually gone with Gwen, even though she doesn't know that he was potentially with him when she died, that kind of thing. Yeah. But then it made me feel a lot better about the whole thing that she figured out that her dad made him promise. Yeah, that she figured out that Peter was with him. Because otherwise I would have been really upset if she hadn't figured that out. But the thing is when Aunt May says pretty girl and he's like yeah, she's like did you ask her out? He's like nah, I'm bad for her. And she's like, and Aunt May is like, well there's one thing you are, Peter, and you're good. And it's like, is he though? Because in the second film, Aunt May doesn't know, right? He's still keeping it a secret from Aunt May.
Oh, she knows, but we'll talk about that.
She knows, but the idea is like, it isn't official that she knows in the second one, right? Yeah. So if we're going off the assumption that she doesn't know, then all she's seen is her teenager, who occasionally gets black eyes and busted lips, who got a lot more black eyes, busted lips, and bloody knuckles after his uncle died, is still 100% a good person? Like, yeah. I just feel like she said it a bit too confidently without enough of a hint that she knows.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is they don't do anything with their relationship. So after Ben dies, they don't really share any scenes together, other than the whole get me eggs, where's my eggs, why are you out so late stuff.
Yeah,
and that's really it. And so you get the sense that she's trying to help him through this, and by extension help herself through it, because she'll need someone too, but she can't reach him and he won't let her. And yeah, I know that from experience as well, where people are trying to help you, or they're trying to find a way to help you, and they can't, because you're not willing to accept it. And, you know, I've been in that position many, many times, where people are like, okay, all right, what do you need from me? What can I do for you? What is it that will help you reach this next stage? And I'm just spiraling, you know? And that's what Peter's doing. Yeah. He is spiraling, that's... You know, that's when he's on his vengeance hunt as well. So it's the same thing. It's he's in a unhealthy spiral, and it's caused by grief and guilt and all those unhelpful emotions. And she doesn't know what to do with him at that point.
Mm.
But again, they don't do anything with it. And Sally Field talks about how she wasn't that fussed about this role for this film. She did it as a favor for a friend of hers who was the producer. It was her last film before she died as well. But she didn't care about it. It wasn't because the role is thankless. It's nothing. It's not even as significant as the Raimi version of Aunt May, who is actually quite prominent in those films, whereas the Sally Field version, she gets a lot to do in the second one, and I'm looking forward to talking about that. But in this one, she's an afterthought, really. But so I think at the end that's supposed to be founded on something that we don't see. So there are, she has become aware, or she is aware of the fact that Peter Parker, her nephew that she raised, is fundamentally a good person.
I think they should have given us like a bit more of a moment between them that shows that she knows, because you know, as far as they've shown us on screen, she has no evidence that he's not just going out and getting into fights every night.
Well, that's what he's doing. It's exactly what he's doing.
I mean, you know, but like not just like as a random dude getting beat up every night. And that's not, you know, whether you're trying to help the little guy or not, that's hanging out in these places looking for a fight is not what good people do.
No.
And so just, I know she's trying to reassure him, but it was too concrete without a statement. Without enough of a hint that she knows, and that was kind of frustrating to me. Also, the paint job on their new window and the door is shit. Like, he puts his forehead against the door and it has, like, the number, like, 36 right in front of his face. It just looks awful. Like, it's like someone did it with, like, a stencil and, like, one of those, like, big, like, metallic Posca pens or something, and it just looks, like, really
maybe
bad.
Maybe it's just temporary before they get the proper door installed, because he did a number on that earlier.
Well, no, that's the thing. This is the fixed one. This is the fixed door with the new glass in it. But, like, the number is shit. I was like, why didn't you just get a sticker that said 36 instead of, like, doing it with marker? It looked terrible.
Yeah, can't say I noticed that, but, yeah, fair point, I suppose.
I'm an artist, so... I was just like, that's a bad paint job.
Yeah, I guess that's supposed to be that affirmation that other people see me as a good person. Because after that, he starts seeing the spider symbol being graffitied, for example.
Yeah, this is really nice. I love that.
And even Flash has accepted him in both guises. Yeah. He accepts him as Peter and Spider-Man. Flash is only in like three scenes, but yeah.
Like this Flash. I like what they did with Flash in this movie, and I wish they... Is Flash in the second movie?
No.
See, because that's the thing. It's like, they had him as the bully, and then they had him as picking on Peter, and all that. And then when Peter was, like, upset about his uncle, he came to speak to him, because he's like, I can see this kid's angry and I get it, you know? Like, obviously, Flash has got something's going on, because he comes over to talk to him and he lets him, you know, like, hold him there, and he's like, I get it and I'm sorry. And then, like, later on, you know, he says that he likes the Spider-Man and what he stands for and stuff, and it's all right. What I would have liked is, instead of having more of a focus on Gwen, maybe having, like, instead of having the focus on him getting back with Gwen, having him becoming friends with Flash would have been nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a queer person, I'm very much done with the out gay kid getting with the closeted homophobic bully. Like, I'm very done with that trope, but I think if they had become friends in the second one, that would have been a really nice progression.
Yeah, they become friends in the comics as well, eventually.
Yeah. They do in the...
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Because he's Agent Venom in that, eventually.
Yeah.
And they do that backstory where he comes from a poor family and his dad is a deadbeat and stuff like that, yeah. Which is the comics. And then Flash is in the Holland movies, but he's very different.
I think they're hinting at him being some kind of Harry Osborn type, because he's got rich parents that don't like he's got like a chauffeur to drive him home, but his parents don't come even after their field trip got attacked multiple times.
He's a different sort of bully as well. Yeah,
very much so. I won't get into that, but they're definitely setting up some kind of thing with him. And the reason he's perhaps a bit of a dick is because his parents are rich and always ignoring him.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting if they validated by other people because he doesn't get it from his parents. Yeah.
Yeah. And acting out is probably one of the few things that got him attention as a kid. Because, you know, if they're rich and he had nannies, if he was badly enough behaved, then maybe they'd, you know, tell mom and dad and they'd give him a talking to. And that is attention when you're a kid. That kind of thing.
Flash in the other movies, he's just the bully. He's just the after. He's not anything other than that in those movies.
But yeah, I like that they gave him a little bit of character. He's not just a dick. But, you know, I don't... Yeah, it's nice. It's nice.
Yeah, it works. It does work. The your uncle died, that sucks, I'm sorry bit. He's probably... He can relate to that for some reason. I don't know why, but he can.
What a not super bad young man.
Yeah, people aren't just bad all the time if they're bad at all. Yeah, which is a shame.
You know what? When I was, there's a lot of, particularly during the crane scene, there's a lot of, you know, swinging and then flipping into the next swing. And I was like, where is my Spider-Man that takes up swinging trapeze to get better swinging technique? You know, where is my circus Spider-Man that learned to do circus so they could be a better vigilante and get around better, and then also started learning neat tricks, because that makes so much sense to me. Like, I was watching it just like, you have to get the rhythm right, and obviously there is an inherent skill that Spider-Man has to do this, but like, you know, when he, you know, we've seen that he likes to research and practice these things, and so like, I mean, I don't care that it wasn't Andrew Garfield, but I would just love to see any Spider-Man decide to take up swinging trapeze, because hey, this is a thing I do now, it would be cool to learn to do it better.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe it's one of the things that he researches during the montage that we don't see.
Yeah,
there is, yeah, the bit during where they talk about
his spandex research.
Spandex. Everything's spandex.
Yep.
Yeah. And you get that the line about the pendulum, where the weight of the,
with the nerds,
yeah,
talking about,
yeah,
how Spider-Man swings. Yeah, that would have been, I like that, because that kind of reminds me of you know, Tom Holland talking about the physics, and Iron Man talking a bit about the physics of his Spider-Man, just being like, he's like, that's however many tons that you're flipping around here, and you know, that thing doesn't obey the laws of physics at all.
Yeah. But the swinging's very good in this one. I actually quite like before the crane bit, you know, before he's tasered by the police, where he's scrambling to get across town, and it's very rough. It's very inelegant, and he gets blindsided. He accidentally gets hit by that, and then it's the point where he looks at how far away Oscorp is, and he's like, oh man, it's like, so far away, because it's something you've never seen with Spider-Man before. It never seems like he has any issues getting around.
But New York is big, you know, and it's nice to see a bit of that.
I mean, I'm thinking in the PS4 video game, I'm like, I'll be there in 5 minutes, it's fine.
Yeah. It's like, you know, he is a neighborhood Spider-Man, but New York is a big fucking neighborhood. Yeah. It's like, I remember seeing a post about how superheroes need to... It was a post that was like, you know, Superman's out here saving the world, Spider-Man's covering all of New York, and Batman's helping all of Gotham, and then Daredevil is just micromanaging like 10 blocks of Hell's Kitchen, and he's just like, yeah, he's got very realistic expectations for what he can do as one person with super senses, like, you know, which is really funny, just... Yeah. The idea of him micromanaging 10 blocks of New York is just such a funny way to put it.
Yeah, but he was stopping stuff that no one else does.
This is true. He gets the big guys.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, not so much, because he's got to swing around looking for all the, you know, car thieves and shit.
For snatchers and whatever else he's
after.
Yeah.
But doesn't he, he does get a police scanner at some point. I don't remember if it's in this film or in the second one. Doesn't he get a police scanner?
Yeah, he makes an app on his phone somehow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I know that... I think Daredevil does that as well. Someone does that. Who is it who does that with the police scanner?
It's in the Sam Raimi films as well. He has a police scanner in his apartment. In his one room that he lives in. But in this one, he has a police scanner app on his phone that he made himself. He's got some weird circuit board that's plugged into the USB port in his phone.
Just one of his many hobbies.
Little inventions, yeah. But I like the self-made Spider-Man as well. I like that as an idea.
It's really nice.
The video game does that too, where all his tech is very haphazard and flung together because he's poor and doesn't have those kind of resources. And that's one problem I have with the MCU Spider-Man is, you know, Stark tech everywhere and things like that. But
yeah, because obviously he was very homemade for about 5 minutes, or 2 minutes really, and then he, you know, has to resort to his old suit later on. But
the conflict Homecoming is, I don't need that stuff to be a hero.
Yeah,
and that's the realization that he learns. But again, I would have loved if the MCU had inherited this version of Spider-Man, and if he had stayed away from the Avengers. I'll help out now and again, but I'll do my own thing. And it is him making apps on his phone to help him crime fight and things like that. And in the video game, he has a heads-up display in his mask, but he made it himself and stuff like that. So he just scrambles it all together. So you get the impression, had this version continued, it would be more of that. Because he makes the web shooters himself, which is you know, it's a very quick scene, but I like the scene where he's testing it.
I love that moment where he gets it to work and he goes like, yes! Like that silent, like, I fucking did it! I love that reaction so much. It's so cute.
Yeah,
it's a really good moment.
Yeah. And the little muzzle flash when he fires his web shooters, I quite like that, actually. I know a lot of people don't, but I think that's quite a good... It's a little tactile thing, actually. It makes it look functional.
The what thing?
The little muzzle flash. You know, there's a little light that goes off whenever he fires his web shooter.
Oh, right.
It's like the muzzle flash on a gun, but...
I don't think I noticed.
It's just a very functional thing, and obviously the web shooters exist so they can be crushed in the final scene, so you can't use them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although I gotta say, I feel like he should definitely have had his wrist in some sort of bandage after that, you know? I feel like he definitely got some components pressed into parts of wrists that should not have things pressed into.
Probably.
But he heals very quickly, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
He also has a bullet wound that's never addressed.
Yeah, I find it kind of really... Because the thing is, I've said this before on the podcast, but one of my favourite tropes, particularly in fan fiction and stuff, is Wump. Or Hurt and Comfort, which is just specifically when people are hurt and then they struggle with it and they get looked after. And so when people have like these injuries, and I like the character a lot, I want to watch them struggle with it and get taken care of. And it's really frustrating for me when they just, you know, when it's like, it's such an issue in the moment and then it's just gone. You know, no lingering effects or anything. And it's like, no, I've had books that have totally ignored like, something that's a major issue when it happens, and then it would be like a long-term injury, but then stops being a thing on the next page, and you're like, come on, give me that Hurt Comfort.
Well, have you ever seen the Rock film the Rampage, that came out roughly the same time?
Oh no, I know of it though.
Well, there's a scene in Rampage where he gets shot and it's in the stomach. And it's, you've just been shot, and he's like, nah, I missed all the vital organs, I'm fine. And then it's not a problem after that. It's just, no, that's not how bullet wounds work.
That's not, what the...
Yeah, so in this, I can't actually tell if the bullet goes in or if it just grazes him. If it grazes him, then that's fine, it's just a leg injury, I suppose, but if it's
It's meant to like just go through the muscle on his leg or something. I think that's the idea. We don't see an exit wound, we just see it from that one position. Yeah. But I think the idea is it's not that big of a deal, but it is a deal.
Yeah, he makes a web bandage and just mucks on. Yeah. He gets on with it.
Yeah, it was funny though, watching him do those elegant swings from the crane, and it's like, as someone who has done aerial circus before, I was like, he's really going all out with his limbs there. You know, he's not quite pointing his toes, but he is swinging that injured leg out a lot. He's not holding it back at all, you know, which is interesting.
Also, all those flips will be slowing you down. Just saying, you should probably just swing more directly.
Yeah, maybe try a bit more Ninja Warrior instead of swinging trapeze, but, you know, boy's got style.
Yeah. But I like that sort of anti-climax as well, where he jumps off the roof and it's that triumphant moment, the music swells, and by the way, James Horner's score in this film is amazing.
It's gorgeous, oh my god, scores, I love it.
But it's so good. I love James Horner as a composer. He composes on Star Trek as well, and Titanic, and Avatar, and all those stuff. But his score is great here, and it's that swelling music moment, and then he jumps off the roof, and then, oh no, what's going on? He hasn't hit anything, and then he gets lifted up by the beam. So, it's
very nice.
Yeah,
I also liked when he first jumps off the building, and then like he trips over all those tables at the on the street, just walks off like nothing happened. I'm just imagining like. Because he was, like, going, like, woohoo, as he was, like, falling. So, like, someone would have heard him. Someone will have seen him. And even if there was no one on that street, the people that work in that restaurant have just seen some guy appear out of nowhere, smash all their shit, and wander off. And they're just like, the fuck? Yeah. Like
very empty New York, actually. There's not a lot of people around.
Not a lot of people in this version of New York.
But, you've got the... Yeah, the barista will come out after that and be like, oh my god, what the hell happened here? Someone's broken all these mugs. And then when Spider-Man becomes a public commodity that's known of, it's like, that's the guy that broke all our mugs.
It's the guy that trashed our tables before we had that booking come in on the Thursday. Oh, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. All these things.
He had a huge corporate bucking coming in, and they were not pleased that they couldn't sit outside.
Yeah.
While we were cleaning up broken glass.
Yeah, that's the guy that makes a mess of everything. He just makes a mess. That's what he does. It does Spider-Man.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
That's funny. Anything else?
No, I covered all of my notes.
We have done the thing.
Yeah. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 conversation will be twice as long because it has a lot.
So yeah, it's been Amazing Spider-Man 2. Thanks for coming to chat to me about
Amazing
it.
Spider-Man 1. Fun. We're not on Amazing Spider-Man 2 yet.
We're not on Amazing Spider-Man 2. This was... I'll say that again. This has been Amazing Spider-Man. Thank you for coming to chat with me about it. I had a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah, I love chatting. I love this film. I do really enjoy this film. I think it has a lot going for it.
Yeah, I love this film. And I love Garfield.
Yeah, and it's been really good just tearing it to pieces and picking it apart and extolling its virtues.
Yeah, what's nice about the podcast is that I never feel like I'm ripping things apart the way my friends used to when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people would only talk about the shit bits, and that I used to really struggle with it. But now I feel like I'm kind of positively critiquing things, and that's really enjoyable.
It's about finding balance. It really is.
Yeah, definitely. So, Craig, where can the people find you?
So on this fine network, I can be found on Rarely Going, predominantly at the moment. I'm covering Star Trek Prodigy, which has just started as of the day of recording, and I love it. So the first episode, I don't know when this is going out, actually, but I'm covering it. I'm doing it with Luke, alternate hosting, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying it so far in its one episode. Obviously, I can be found on Podcast 616, because that's what you're listening to right now. You've probably heard me do the other three Spider-Man movies before this one, and I'll be doing the next one. But I'm not doing the Tom Holland ones. I'm missing those out for some reason. But yeah, I got in on all the Spider-Man stuff. That's my wheelhouse. This is where I live. Yeah, outside of the network, I'm found on Neil Before Blog, and there's an attached podcast, Neil Before Pod. So it's neilbeforeblog.co.uk. The most recent episode at the time of recording that released was a chat about Shang-Chi, which was good fun, and the news roundup is in the editing suite as I'm talking now, but probably a couple more episodes by the time this goes out, so it can be found there. I'm also reviewing things like Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow and stuff like that, so yeah, I'm all there, and I review films as well, so you can find me there. Personally on Twitter, I am under Nemesis4909, and I will fulfill my legal obligation now. I did not start it as a Star Trek reference. It became a Star Trek reference later. It was a Resident Evil reference when I chose it, because I was so edgy and I loved Resident Evil 3, which is a great game. And then Star Trek eventually brought out a film called Nemesis. So there it is. That's me. That's where I can be found.
Nice. And I have been Carpenter Lockwood. You can find me on the social medias as vintage_T3A. That's vintage T. I am mostly on this network on Podcast 616. I do a bit of Real Talk and some others every now and again. The last episodes I was on the Venom episodes, and in future I will be on our next Amazing Spider-Man conversation. I think I've got a few other things lined up. You can also find me on the sci-fi comedy drama podcast, Kyo Maxi's Adventures in Everything by Two Strangers Production. It is such a wonderful podcast to be on. I play Maxi, and it's a lot of fun. I cannot recommend it enough. If you like Doctor Who, if you like Douglas Adams, anything like that, you'll like Kyo Maxi. We recently recorded episode 6. I think the first 3 episodes have been uploaded to the public so far. They're just a lot of fun. It would mean a lot if you checked them out. And you can also find me on an episode of The Nightmare Portal by May Norwood, which is also one of the various podcast sites. That's pretty much me. Oh, I also occasionally live stream on Twitch, still under vintage_T3A, where I occasionally read scary stories on my show, Gaslight Cryptkeep Ghoul Boss. So if you like some Halloweeny spooks, come and join me. That's us. That's been the episode. Thanks for joining us for another episode, and remember, we're part of the We Made This Podcast Network. Please subscribe to Podcast 616, give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you go to patreon.com/wemadethis. Amazing Spider-Man is not all we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in a moment. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616, where with great power comes great responsibility.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
The TARDIS crew.
But the 11th hour is just something about the way he comes in immediately and just steals everything away from Tennant. Fish fingers and custard and boom. And yes. Then you get that ending scene where he's walking through the hologram images, and he deserves that at this point.
Absolutely. I think the 11th Doctor is a masterclass introducing the new Doctor. I don't think any story has ever really topped that for introductions.
The Giddy Carousel of Pop.
I went to the San Remo Pop Festival on a plane. That's a smash hits memory for you. On a plane with Frankie Goes to Hollywood, we had Frankie, all of Spandau Ballet, all of Duran Duran, Sade, Chaka Khan, Bronski Beat, and Talk Talk. All on the same aircraft. I remember thinking, if this old barge goes down, then A, what's the insurance? And B, you know, the Cocteau Twins will probably have a hit next week because the whole thing will be cleared out.
Right in the childhood.
It's a documentary.
Oh, get in the bin. So this was... Oh, okay, right. We talked about Prejudice, but documentaries, maybe that is the...
So it was a Halloween thing where they had a lot of very famous TV presenters from the time presenting from the most haunted house in Britain. It was massively controversial at the time, and it was either you thought it was amazing and, you know, it was critically
like
well
received. Most haunted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe-ish.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.